Hey, has lichen sclerosis messed with your relationships? You know, partner, family, friends, even at work? Then you need to join us at the Holistic Healing Summit this May 13th to the 17th, because we're bringing all the experts. We're going to be talking about intimacy, sex, as well as how do you talk to your family, friends, provider, boss? All of those things. And this is a free event, live, virtually, so you can catch it anywhere in the world, May 13th to the 17th, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. We've got sessions going on all day. Get more information at lssupportnetwork.org/WHS. That's lssupportnetwork.org/WHS.
Hey, welcome. Thank you for coming to listen to the Lichen Sclerosis Podcast. My name is Kathy, and this is our journal of learning about and living with lichen sclerosis. Each week, I either speak to someone or research an aspect of lichen sclerosis and bring you the information so you don't have to go searching. I bring you the real talk without the medical jargon. This week has been a much anticipated episode because it reaches into a whole different realm of LS that really doesn't get a lot of information. It doesn't get talked about very often, but it affects hundreds, if not thousands, of kids. Did I say kids? Yes, we're talking about pediatric LS. And we are talking to dermatologist Dr. Sandy Flan. She has been treating patients for over 20 years. She is amazing. And she's here to drop all of the tea on how to treat pediatric LS, what we should be looking for in our kids, how to talk to them, how to create that safe space to get them to vocalize if they're having issues, and to, you know, to let you look, because I'm a mom and I know sometimes it's a little hard for those conversations to happen. It doesn't matter if you don't have a child in your life right now that has LS, because if you have LS, we all know there is some kind of genetic component with LS. About, they say right now, 12 to, I believe it's 17% of the ladies have a first generation relation that can also have LS. So it's really important that we know what to look for, we know what to do, and we know how to open up those lines of communication with our kids, our nieces, nephews, friends of the family, so that they're not suffering alone, right? Imagine how much you suffered alone, and now think about the babies. Not cool. So I'm so excited for you to hear that conversation. And I want to give a quick shout out to my sponsor, Lichen Sclerosis Support Network, whose mission it is to spread education and information so people get diagnosed earlier and get better treatment. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Dr. Sandy Flan. Welcome, Sandy, or Dr. Sandy, I'm sorry.
That's fine. You can call me Sandy. That's fine, Kathy. Thank you very much for having me on.
With your practice, seeing mostly children, what do you see is the difference between treating LS in adults and treating LS in children?
So the basic mainstay of medical treatment of LS is exactly the same, whether you have it in a child or you have it in an adult. So it's quite simple. It's the use of soap substitutes when you wash, and then the use of a potent topical steroid to prevent scarring and to prevent architectural loss, basically, and you get very easy bruising. So that is the mainstay of all lichen sclerosis treatment, whatever the age. I think it's probably more important in the pediatric population because they have all the rest of their lives to live in their skin. And if anything, I think the difficulty is in getting to a dermatologist, I think, because we only see a handful. We know that there are two peaks. We have a peak in childhood. We have a peak later in life. But I see far more ladies later in life who've been diagnosed later in life. But I think the first cornerstone is getting the child seen.
Yeah, I hear a lot of women who, once they find out that they've been diagnosed with LS and they may be, you know, in their 30s, 40s, 50s, a lot of them say, you know, I feel like remembering back, I've had this since childhood. So let's talk about treatment a little bit. Now, you had said that the treatment is basically the same that you use for an adult as a child. So you are using high potent steroid.
That's the standard treatment at the minute, is super potent topical steroids is the standard for women with LS. We do use it in children. I must admit, for the very young, I don't. I actually use maybe one step down for if you have a 3 or 4 year old, maybe up to about the age of 6 or 7, I might use the next step down. So medium potency topical steroid, and often find that that works just as well. And then as they get older, you find that the control slips, so that potent topical steroids are what is needed. And everyone worries about, we worry as doctors, we don't want to be putting people on long-term potent topical steroids. But if you're faced, it's a bit like you're stuck between a rock and a hard place, because we've got to make sure that the LS doesn't scar, we don't seal up that introital narrowing, and we also know that there's a real risk of vulval skin cancer in that area if the LS is not treated.
Right.
That's really what you don't want to happen. And we know that proper treatment of LS reduces that risk of skin cancer massively.
Yes, absolutely. And I've also heard that if you leave the LS untreated in a child, that you run the risk of the labia minora not developing. Is that correct?
It's just that if they do develop, what you have is because you've got chronic untreated inflammatory tissue, soft mucosal tissue in close apposition, basically they will develop, but they'll seal up.
So they'll just like immediately reabsorb, they just fuse.
Basically, it starts anteriorly over the clitoris, and then it just seals up, it zips up, and so what you don't want to happen. Basically, there are other things which are possibly worth trying, but protopic or topical calcineurin inhibitors, I find they sting an awful lot. And
they're not as effective to stopping the progression to vulvar cancer.
Yeah.
The guidelines for an adult is once a day for a month, every other day for a month, and then twice a week, pretty much for life as maintenance. Is that similar to a child?
That is the same. Some LS does burn out. So I've definitely got a few kids in whom the LS has gone quite quiet with proper treatment. Mm-hmm. So it's twice a weekly. The guidelines is not twice weekly forever. It is twice weekly as maintenance. And then if you have a subsequent flare-up, you go back up to the top again and start again. We still need to probably keep them under review. I see them every year to make sure that everything's, how much steroid are we going through? We should be only going through, I think it's like 30 grams in 6 months or something like that. It shouldn't be a huge amount. We're talking a tiny pea-sized amount, depending on how much we're treating. If you've just got a little bit of posterior fourchette disease, the bit between the vulva and the perianal skin, you're talking a really tiny amount of steroid that needs to be put on that area. And then just as long as they're under review, then that's fine.
Do you find that the LS kind of goes dormant during puberty?
It depends. It really depends. I've had one kid in which it responded very, very quickly to medium potency topical steroids. Within about a year to 18 months, she's completely under control. And mum's managed to reduce from twice weekly. She's just not putting any mometasone on at all. And we've just kept her under 6 monthly review anyway. But when I see her, she's literally just using soap substitutes. So she went under very good control very, very quickly. Within about 2 years of me seeing her, she's still prepubertal.
Okay.
So there might even be a possible flare in puberty, but everyone is different.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, right. Yeah, we're talking generalities, but absolutely. I say it all the time. LS is an individualized disease, and everyone's going to progress differently, different symptoms, different progression of symptoms. So this is all very a generalization, and everyone is very, very different. What are some of the things we should look out for in our children, our nieces, nephews, because little boys can get this too, even though it's not as common. So what should we look out for in our little?
It's subtle, the signs. We get children down to the age of 4 or 5 who have lichen sclerosis. So it's hard to vocalize symptoms at that age. You kind of, if you're, I don't know if you remember when you were 4 or 5, trying to explain to a mom or dad or anyone, a caregiver, that about the symptoms of itch and soreness and burning are words which are, you know, you take as a given when you're a grown up or as a teenager, but even as a teenager, sometimes it's hard to vocalize. There's lots of overlay of the fact that yes, they have symptoms, but how do they make those apparent to the person that they can confide those things in? You know,
right. With them lacking the language, how do we phrase the question? What do we say to help them vocalize it?
Yeah, I mean, for example, my most recent patient, her mom had lichen sclerosis. She was quite clued up on it. And I mean, if anything, she just spotted that her daughter was always a squirmer, was the words that she first used when she came into the consultation. And she was maybe about 6 or 7 at this point. So it'd been going on for a couple of years at that point. But school had commented on it, that she never sat still in the seat. And then she said there'd be then times where she wouldn't want to go riding the bike with the family. Then the penny dropped. And then she had a look. And because she was a vulval lichen sclerosis sufferer herself, she then saw the white patches and then twigged. But then we have in the UK here, you see your general practitioner who they have a bit of a fear of topical steroids as well. So, and also given to a very young population, everyone gets very scared about potent topical steroids in a very young population. So the child was just given very, very weak topical steroids, which did nothing. Absolutely nothing. So then it took time. It still took time. It still took about 18 months till she saw a dermatologist.
Oh, wow.
And then the minute you see, get the diagnosis, she knew the diagnosis. The minute she walked through the door, she just needed affirmation of that and then got the right treatment because now they're under specialist care. And then everything's been fine since then. Yeah. So for her, the main problem wasn't really the knowing what it was. It was getting through the hurdles to get the right treatment. And then for her, in a way, it was also trying to make her not check her child too often.
Right.
Because as the kid's now 10, that can make her a bit more, the child herself, in a way, a bit worried about what's going on. Why is mommy checking?
Anxious, yes.
Yeah, all the time. Absolutely. Trying to not make it such a big thing.
Yeah. So we should look for squirming, like scratching.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So always, what was it? The other word, another mother said, always has her hands in her pants. So that's what people, aunts and uncles had all commented, the grandparents had noted that she was always itching down there. And, you know, for the mother who doesn't have lichen sclerosis or doesn't have that awareness, then it's just, you know, telling the child off all the time for itching and fidgeting and putting hands in pants when you shouldn't be in public, that and when you're around at grandparents you shouldn't be doing that. And that took quite some time, to be honest. And I don't think I've seen a child under 12 who's been able to vocalize, you know, very clearly those symptoms until it's taken someone to look and see, well, actually it looks a bit wrong.
Even with my own daughters, being that I do this now full time, and I've changed the language that I've used with my daughters. Like, I've always talked to them about I used to use the word vagina for their vulva, but now I know the correct terminology, so I've taught them that. And being that I have LS, I let them know the symptoms. I let them know if it's itching, if it's burning, if it hurts, let mommy know. And so my youngest daughter, it was about a couple months ago now, let me know that it was hurting. It was burning, she said. It's burning and it was itching. And of course, you know, my heart starts racing like, oh my God, please don't let her have LS. And we went to the doctor and everything, and it wasn't BV. They tested her and so they gave her yeast medication. They felt it was a yeast issue. And thankfully right now she says she doesn't have any more issues. But at the same time, how do you rule out BV and yeast with kids? Because it was very traumatic for her when we went. They had to do a swab, a vaginal swab, and they had me do it because I guess they felt that she would be more comfortable with me doing it. And of course, then that was traumatic for me as well, because, you know, she was in pain. And not only was she in pain, but this was uncomfortable for her to be in that situation. And so I barely got the swab in there, and I was just like, I can't do it. And so they were just like, we have enough fluid on there. And I'd love to know your process of, do you do swabs? Now, she was 8 years old at the time. She just turned 9. But do you do swabs on children? How do you confirm LS if they don't have the classic, you know, white waxy skin, the patches and things like that?
I mean, from a dermatology point of view, I mean, for us, thrush looks quite typical on genital skin, and there's often it's that history, and obviously it looks often quite red, and you might get these little satellite lesions. So the main symptom with candidal infections down below are more of soreness, to be honest, and it looks different. It does look different to LS. If the clinical suspicion is high, it is always better to take a swab than to treat blindly. Because what we don't want is the situation, which can happen, because it's the easiest path, where children or adults or young people get multiple courses of anti-thrush treatment without any definitive evidence of candida, because then that's not right either. I mean, by the time people see someone like me, they've often had lots of swabs and lots of anti-thrush treatments for a good couple of years, blindly, to be honest. And we've often asked, has any swabs been taken? And they might go, well, yes, or they might go, well, no, I've just had lots of anti-thrush treatment. Or they'll go, well, yes, but nothing's ever been found. So for us, it's almost that there's an overdiagnosis of thrush by a family doctor in a child, because that's the most common and it's the easiest diagnosis to make. And it's an easy treatment course, because it's usually a tablet or it's a pessary or it's a cream, to be honest, a caniston cream.
Yes, that's what they gave her, a cream.
Yeah, and that's an easy one to do. But normally, typically, thrush should look, there should be some sort of white cheesy discharge, there should be some soreness, there should be this redness that you get. And the diagnosis of LS usually has to be made with the clinical phenotype going forwards.
So do you do biopsies on children?
We can if we are really not very sure. I must admit, I do biopsies on children, but doing a vulval biopsy is fraught with difficulties anyway, even in an adult patient. Yes. So with children, there's a very tenuous trust relationship there.
Yes.
And even doing biopsies on them for other things is difficult. And usually children under about the age of 11 or 12, usually 11, will not tolerate any procedure under a local anesthetic, no matter how many treats you give them. So that is the difficulties in the pediatric population. You know, you don't want to subject your child to a general anesthetic just for a biopsy.
Okay.
But local anesthetic procedures are not tolerated in the very young. So we often do go by clinical features, the clinical history and what it looks like. And to be honest, LS does look pretty typical. You see the whitish changes, the prepubertal vulva does look different to the adult vulva, but you should see the classical features of LS to make that diagnosis, because there are other things that cause itchy vulvas, the commonest being seborrheic dermatitis, which is just a very mild form of an eczema that you get in response to a yeast, a different type of yeast, not a candidal yeast. And that is actually the commonest cause of vulval itching in women and children. So that has typical dermatological features, which look very different to LS. And also it would be a different history to that of a candidal infection, which is more of soreness.
Interesting. We talked about what we should be looking for. Now, what kind of language should we give to our children to give them the ability to kind of say that it's itching or burning? Because, and I guess it depends too on the age group, right? Because you're talking about 3 to 5 year old, their language is very different from a 6 to 10 year old. So let's talk about the smaller age group, because I have been contacted by a woman whose 3 year old had been diagnosed with LS, and she said she noticed that her daughter didn't want to use the restroom. She was always having her hands in her underwear. And so when she looked, she did see the white patches and the white skin. And then she immediately took her to the doctor and was able to get her diagnosed. But the baby, she couldn't tell her.
And that's not going to happen. I mean, that age, they haven't got the ability to link the two, you know, okay, their symptoms with being able to vocalize it on that level. It just isn't going to happen. So that is going to just be a mom who's going to have to check and just see and link that between what they're doing. You know, they're always having their hands in their pants, or when you start treatment, then you'll find that they're not having any problems going to the loo anymore, and they look more comfortable and rested in themselves. And that is usually all you'll see in the very young, because they won't be able to vocalize. And obviously, I think what you are doing, educating your children, your daughters, to use the language is actually really, really good. That's exactly what all my other mothers do with their children with LS, is teaching them. But there is definitely a certain age at which they can do that. There is below 6 or 7, depending on the maturity of the child, they just cannot. But above that age, then they will, and then you hit teenager years. So you have a sweet spot where you've taught them how to vocalize, how to describe things, and you've made it a very, how do I say it, not confrontational, but it's a very open area.
Yeah, natural language. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, it's absolutely. just like we're talking about your arm, we're talking about your vulva. Yeah, my youngest was, when I started checking her, like in the very beginning, she's like, no, I don't want you to look. I don't want you to look. And now I'm like, let mommy check your vulva. And she's like, so it is that safe space and making, creating that environment where it's not like you have to be scared or ashamed or, you know. But I also at the same time let her know that you don't do that for everybody. You only do that for the doctor, and you do that for, you know, mommy or daddy when they're checking you to see if you're okay. So
that is absolutely spot on. So I say that to all the little girls that come in. We have a chat, and you're right, the very first consultation, it takes time to build that trust, because they've been, you know, you don't show your private bits to strangers and things like that. Mm-hmm. So, but you know, mommy's here, so then mommy, oh, it's fine. So then we do, and then usually by the second or third appointment, you know, it's, you're right, they say, oh, it's, you know what you did last time, yeah, and it's fine. And they can vocalize to say, well, no, I've actually, you know, this hasn't stopped me going swimming, this hasn't stopped me going bike riding, I can do everything everyone else does at school, and I'm concentrating at school, I'm not wanting to scratch anymore. And that, together with what you can see, it all tells you whether things are working or not. Love teenagers, that. Obviously, different issue completely. They probably get to the point where they won't let you look anymore. And then you have to trust them a bit and teach them how to apply the creams themselves. That's another thing. And how to monitor the area themselves as well is another issue.
Let me ask you, when you say she's now just using a special wash, what kind of washes do you recommend?
Basically, not soap. Not bubble baths, and nothing that fragrances or lathers up. So we have prescription grade, what we call emollients in the UK. So these are things that can be prescribed, but some of them you can just purchase. So the cheapest one we have here is aqueous cream. So I know that's got a lot of bad press because it's got sodium lauryl sulfate in, but it shouldn't be used as a leave-on emollient. It should be used as a rinse-off product. So it's literally wash-on, wash-off. Okay. If that's too drying, we have something called emulsifying ointment, which is a bit oilier. And then you've got the branded things. So we have, like, you know, I think you've got in America as well, Aveeno, they do a wash. Mm-hmm. You've got an Australian brand called QV. There's a French brand called CeraVe. I think you do have that in the US. They all have quite excellent washers. Okay. And they just are called, you know, they're just called skin wash, I think, or something like that. And they are just to use every time they wash. Yeah. And if they're swimming, they use it after when they wash down below. And that's much better than just washing with water alone.
Got it. So with children, do you also recommend, like with adult women, that they use a moisturizer on top of their topical steroid or a barrier cream or anything like that?
I don't know about you, but I would tend to find once you've done your soap substitute and you put your steroid on top, if you put any other moisturizer on top of that, it all just makes it very, it's quite a lot going on down below. So the ointments that we give here are really quite oily. And okay. they don't really need another moisturizer on top of that ointment. The soap substitute and the steroid should just do it. That should be all they need. If they feel like they need it, so if they're on twice weekly and they'd like to put an emollient on the other days, yeah. then that's fine. Then that's totally fine. And then it could be anything. It's down to personal preference. It could be a white paraffin, and that's just down to personal preference. Some ladies do like it, but we just have to make sure that whatever they're putting on down there is of non-fragrance, SLS-free, that kind of thing, because though obviously you're still at risk of getting like a contact dermatitis to any over-the-counter product you put on down below that might have some potential allergens in it.
Yeah, I always recommend to go as natural as possible, one ingredient and test before you try a new one. Don't just slather it on, do the carpet test and just pick a spot. And try it out for a day or two and then see if there's any kind of reaction, because we don't always know what ingredient we might be allergic to or have a reaction to if there's a bunch in there. So I totally agree.
In the US then, so is it, this is interesting. So here we have like prescription grade emollients that we can prescribe to people. You don't have that?
Not that I've know of. No, it's... I've never heard it. You're the first one I've ever heard that there is prescription emollients. We're basically the wild, wild west. Get it where you can.
Yeah, so that is absolutely true then. Because in this country, yeah, for sure, if they were just helping themselves to drugstore moisturizers, I always pull a bit of a face because the product list is massive. There's a huge risk for allergy. Whereas if I give the ones that I've prescribed, then I know that they're fine and that there will be no allergy risk within or irritant risk there at all. So yeah, for sure. If you don't have that, yeah, for sure, you have to do open application tests, for sure.
I love that. So we've talked about the little ones and going up into the teen years. What do you see as the biggest issue with teenagers? Because I do get contacted by girls that are 14, 15. Actually, just this past week, I got contacted by a 14-year-old who was just diagnosed with LS, and she's frightened and just anxious about what does this mean for the rest of her life. As a doctor, how do you handle those conversations when you diagnose them?
Yeah, I mean, it takes time, doesn't it? It does take time, and you might not be able to fit it in like the first consultation, and or they might not be able to vocalize everything in the first consultation. It takes often till the second or maybe even the third before they can get out all their worries. So, you know, for us, the first consultation is, making the diagnosis, getting the treatment plan right, and building trust. And then usually by the second time round, and then we give them lots of written information. We find written information is very helpful. Our national body, the British Association of Dermatologists, we have lots of patient information leaflets that you can just print out on all sorts of skin conditions. And they have one on lichen sclerosis for women. So we hand that out to back up what we're saying in clinic, because we know about 90% of what is said in clinic doesn't get taken in.
Yeah, you're kind of in that headspace of, oh my God, you just gave me a life sentence to this disease. We often talk about this, and we say that you kind of enter this alternate state where you're half listening, but your mind is half racing. It's sad that in the U.S., we found that we don't get a lot of information to begin with. And then the little bit of information that we do get, it's kind of rushed. And a lot of the time it's given as, this is not a big deal. This is what you have. Here's your prescription. Bye. And so you're left with this feeling of despair, and then you go home and Google, and now you're in a full-on panic. So I love the fact that you are educating, you're giving them literature, and you're doing this over multiple visits so that as their mind state kind of settles, they are now grabbing all of this new information from a trusted medical professional and not Google or off of someone in a forum or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's sad to hear that. It really is, because you'd hope, you know, all dermatologists would do it the same. And I'm sure there are loads of good dermatologists here and there. But yeah, I mean, I always just think you just treat your patients exactly how you would want to be treated yourself. And if I had this myself, this is the way I would want someone to talk me through it. And, you know, there is just too much to do in the initial consultation. And everyone does go away. It's just human nature and go, oh, I wish I'd asked, dang it, I wish I'd asked this question and I wish I'd asked that. So we either, it comes up in an email a few weeks later or they do it at the next appointment. And with children, I do follow them up pretty closely because they do respond quite quickly to treatment, much quicker, I think, than the adult population. And they change much quicker, obviously. They're growing. So I follow them up a bit quicker, a bit closer than I do my adult patients. And then, yeah, after that, it's talking about the issues about, well, it's also trying to impart to them what I think it is important for young people with a chronic inflammatory skin condition, which has a risk of skin cancer in it, and what is important for them to do from their side. It's telling the teenager about the importance of self-monitoring, the importance of treatment, and it has no impact on fertility. But if you leave it untreated, I always tell them about my 80, 90-year-old ladies who've suffered till the age of 80 and never had a child because her introital opening is the size of a 5-pence piece, you know. Right. So, and that's what you say, well, this is all entirely preventable, but we have to work on this together to make sure that doesn't happen. So it's a bit of what you do and it's a bit of what I do, and together we'll get it good. But this has no impact on your ability to have children or have sexual intercourse. And obviously, if sexual intercourse is a problem when you get to that age, you know, above a certain age.
Right.
you know, if it is an issue, you know, you need to let me know, because I'm your doctor. If you don't tell your doctor what the issue is, or your mom, if you can't vocalize, just tell someone, because if you don't tell people about the issue, then we can't help you.
And that's the thing.
That's the thing with teenagers, isn't it? You can't have mum looking down below all the time asking prodding questions. So they have to be able to feel that they can share that in a safe environment, and that is perfectly normal.
Oh yeah, I can see how that the conversation, especially around sex, could be uncomfortable. So knowing that they have someone outside of mom who may not have fostered that type of relationship, that they have a safe space with their doctor, that's amazing. I love that. I heard another statistic recently from another doctor that said that LS is being diagnosed way more often. The population of diagnoses is going up. And she said that she doesn't believe that more people are getting LS. It's just that we are talking about it more. It's more open for especially younger women to be more free and talk about and learn about our bodies. And we are more open to coming to the doctors, like you said, and talking to our doctors. And there's not that stigma that there was with the older generation. Are you finding that?
Yeah, I think that is right. I don't think it is actually on the rise as a little epidemic of its own. I do think it is, just because I think it's always been there, and I just think people are more savvy about it now and bring it to attention, which is great, which is exactly what we want, because we don't want the current 5-year-olds to be in 85 years time having a life of misery and not wanting to talk about it and feeling that they can't talk about it. I think it's a good thing. I think it is a good thing that things like this are talked about more, so that people don't suffer in silence.
What are some other ways that we can help the younger generation, the kids that are coming up and the teenagers who maybe feel shy to talk about these things or to vocalize these things? What are some ways that we at home can help foster that safe space so that they will be able to just say this something is wrong, and then for us to take, not so much take them at their word, but you know, a lot of the times, me as a mom, you were busy. We're always doing three things at the same time. We've got five people's schedules in our head, and we're thinking about what are we making for dinner. So when you see your kid and they're scratching, you're not automatically, unless you know about LS, and like me, it would be like red flags. But the normal mom, because I'm not normal, she would be like, oh, she must didn't bathe well enough, or you know, she just needs to take a shower or something like that. So understanding that some of us are learning to be more open, because as a child we weren't taught to be open. So we are learning language for ourselves. What's one of the top recommendations you can give to parents or aunts and uncles to kind of help foster that openness, that relationship where there's that safe space?
I think it is just talking to your kids. It might not just be about this subject, because it's basically about, I think, just being open, feeling that you have the freedom that you can talk about any issue in the family. I mean, I've got three kids. We try very hard. Well, I've got two boys and a girl. And obviously, this is just what we do. But we try very hard to have a family dinner every evening. And it is a really small thing. And it might be a rubbish dinner. And it will be probably a rubbish dinner tonight. But it'll be a rubbish dinner. But as long as we're all sat at the table with a knife and fork, and then we do actually sit down and we just do ask each other, so how was your day? And I've learned now, because you're right, you've got all these plates spinning around you, but I've learned to, and it was easy when you're stressed and tired to just go yep through through the things that they are saying, because it's just like white noise sometimes. But yes, then I've learned now, because you know, I have a couple of teenagers now, that it is actually really important to listen to what they're saying. Because in amongst all their white noise, there might be an issue. And we did have an issue with one of our kids. So we've had another issue with another kid. And it took, between my husband and I, one of us picked up. And then they didn't want to really talk about it in front of the whole family. So then one of us went on and had, in a just a very open way. Oh, you know that thing you said at dinner? Do you want to talk about that a bit more? And so it's hard, and it's almost like you have to keep telling yourself, but they're probably vocalizing it the only way they know how. They don't want to make it a big issue if you've got other siblings at home,
and right,
but then it's trying to pick up on those subtleties. In our family, that's what we've learned, is to make it an open discussion thing. Nothing's off the table. Anyone can talk about anything, but it does just take time and patience. Yeah. There's a lot of rubbish that is said that doesn't go anywhere. But every now and again, we've learned that through lockdown, to be honest. We didn't do this before lockdown. We've learned it in the past 18 months of sitting down at the table and make sure everyone's busy, you know, but right, we all, for that half an hour, whatever, we all sit down. And we will deliberately ask the kids, how was your day? What happened today? And also, what are you grateful for
that day? I love that question. Yes, I love that question. And that's super important, too. If you have, like me, I have my youngest. She's high energy. She will talk to you as soon as she walks in the door. You know, as soon as she gets off the bus and in the car, she's telling you about her day and what her friend did and what they did, everything. And then my middle child, she doesn't say anything. Like, she would literally just come in, go to her room. You will only see her when it's time for her to eat, and then you won't see her again till the next morning when it's time to go to school. So with the little one, it's that white noise. Like you said, she talks so much that at some point you kind of just have to like turn her off and just let her run in the background. But I have picked up some of those things like, oh, so, you know, this happened today. How did that make you feel? Or what happened after that? And if I'm not paying attention, then I miss those. But with the other one, I have to intentionally go in there and ask her specific questions. How was your day? Does it work with her? It was, you know, what did you do today? What was your favorite part of the day? That's one of my other questions that I like to ask. What was your favorite part of the day? And what was the least favorite part of the day? And then it kind of grows into a conversation. And in the beginning, it's very difficult because she'll just try to think of anything. But I had to keep on her and say, well, there had to be something. Think hard. Even if your whole day was mundane, you still had to have at least one part that was a little bit better or worse than the rest of it. So I love that. Keeping those lines open and then letting them know that no matter if it was good or bad, you know, like I tell my little one, I may get upset with you sometimes because of something you did, but you still need to come and tell me and we'll deal with it. And even with the older one, very recently, we went on a trip to, because my oldest graduated from college. And so we went on a trip to go and watch him graduate. And so, of course, they were out of school for a week. So they had to do their schoolwork while we were on vacation. And we came back and I asked her, I said, did you get all of your schoolwork done? And she said, yes. And so I get an email after they get back from school from her social studies teacher who says she didn't do her schoolwork, but he's giving her an extension until such and such date for her to get it done. So now I'm like, wait, you told me it was done. And she's a straight A student. She's three marking periods in honor roll. So I didn't check on her because I figured I don't need to check on her. My little one, yeah, I got to check on her. So I went in there and I'm like, why didn't you tell me that you didn't do your social studies work? And so then she was just like, oh, I was afraid you were going to get upset with me. I had to sit and explain to her, mommy's asking you these questions so that if there's an issue, I can help you. If I don't know, I can't help you. And it's the same situation where we have to make them feel comfortable with their body so that they let us know if something's wrong with my body, I feel safe telling mommy or daddy something is wrong with my body so that they can help me. So all of that does end up coming together. I tell them all the time, I am going to be your best friend in the world forever. I am your best friend. So make sure that you treat me as such. I've got your back no matter what. Even when I get angry with you, I still got your back. So creating that space with them is amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what we say to the kids, that we're always on your side.
Yes.
So no matter what goes wrong, it can go right, but no matter what, we're always on your side. We will always fight your corner.
Exactly.
And you know, that gives them that, I think that gives them some strength, doesn't it, to yeah. know. Yeah.
Just like you, we had family meetings. So we sit down and eat, but we sit down once a week since my son, who just graduated college, since he started high school. We started doing family meetings once a week on Sundays. We would sit down, and if there was any kind of an issue, if he did anything, that was his time to say it, and there would be no repercussions. But let us find out you got in trouble and you didn't come and tell us at the family meeting. Not only are you getting in, you know, in trouble for what you did, but you're getting in trouble for not letting us know, because we could head it off. And so I think that created a space with him where he felt safe to come. And a lot of the times kids don't tell you because they're scared. And we created that environment where this is the safe space. We know you're going to make mistakes, and this is the place for you to come and let us know, this is a mistake that I made this week. And that way we're ahead of it. We know what to expect. If we're getting a call from the principal, we know what it's about. And we've got your side of the story already, so we can fight in your corner, just like you said.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we've had to even explain to our kids, you know, we were young once.
Yes.
We've lived through this. So, You know, you think you know, we've actually been there before. Yeah. We know what you're going through. So we might actually know a bit. We might actually be able to help you if you just talk to us. And we you know, we've got the experience. So.
I know. Yeah. Sometimes they think they're too cool. Like, yeah. Oh, you know, you don't know. Yeah. Trust me, you wouldn't recognize high school me from mommy me. No. It's a lot of growing up that happened there. So I love that. I love that. Is there anything else that you wanted to, that we should know for kids and LS?
I think it's all about, it's much more than just the disease, isn't it? I mean, yes. It is so much more with kids, and it depends on the age of the kids. And that's usually the main thing with children. It's the communicating. It's all the bump that happens. Usually, to be honest, treating the disease is pretty simple as long as it's all explained and everyone's on the same side and we all know what to look out for. It's pretty simple. It's just getting in through the door, establishing that trust, and making sure that we're all talking to each other, the communication links are open, and if they're ever worried, don't feel scared about telling mummy, telling dad. There's no judgment on this. It's just a condition. It's just one of those things. Just got to treat it like if you had psoriasis, you just have to treat it. Yeah. You know, it just is. It just is, and there's no judgment on that.
Love that. We've talked a lot about the kids. What about the parents? Like, what are your conversations with the parents? Because I cannot even imagine. That is literally my worst nightmare, is that one of my daughters has LS, because I know what it is. And like you said, with them being so young, they've now got their whole life to have to deal with this issue and monitor and manage it, because it is manageable and you can still have a very normal, productive life as long as you manage it and you don't let it get away from you. So what are some of the conversations that you have with the moms who are freaking out now for their daughters, or in the rare case, their sons? What do you say?
I mean, it's definitely with a younger age child, it's all treatable. It does all burn out. There's a lot I've got to say, a lot to take in. We are going to be seeing each other. But I mean, to be honest, I've not had if they have been freaking out, they've been freaking out internally. You know, I don't see a lot of the freaking out, but...
No, they just leave you and then they go to Facebook and they find the forums and they find the support groups and then they go in there and they find me on Instagram and then they...
And then they'll come back the next time and go, you know, I've been on this and they were talking about this. So, you know, I'm happy with that as long as we're all talking. And I think the more information, the better, as long as it's the right information. And if they do find anything that they feel is a little bit off, we need to talk about it. You know, if they want to talk about anything they found on Google or whatever, then that's fine. We can talk about it. And I just think that's quite key. You know, if you just shut people down and go, well, you know, then it tends to never foster into a good relationship anyway. Yeah. And we are going to be seeing each other. The more we talk about any issue that they're worried about, the better, to be honest. As long as it's backed up by evidence-based medicine and stuff like that, then that's fine.
Talking about that, what are your thoughts on borax? The parents that want to go more of a holistic or don't want to use the steroids, because there's so much fear around steroids, and they want to treat with maybe diet. They want to change diet and use non-steroid methods.
I mean, that's always a hard one. We get it in every sphere of skin disease, in certain countries only. So definitely certain countries don't seem to have steroid worries.
Fear, yeah.
But there are certain countries that definitely do. I mean, I just say to them, well, we have to, as doctors, we have to act according to what is in our national guidelines and what is evidence-based. And there's been no evidence for borax ingestion, topical borax. It's just not been shown to be have any effect. And we issued our national body issued a statement on it actually back in about 2018-19, saying that it's not a recommended treatment, shown no efficacy at all. So we, you know, address it that way. The people who don't want to go on topical steroids, I mean, that is a hard one. All we have left is Protopic, but then you explain that causes stinging and it's not really as effective. And then there's the worry with the, you know, infection and possible cancer risks. It's not what we would recommend. And there's nothing else in modern medicine today. And, you know, I can apologize and go, well, we don't have a magic wand. It's really, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, trying to shoot the doctor down is like trying to shoot the messenger. There are a few areas of research going into looking at other treatments for vulval lichen sclerosis, but this is it as far as we're concerned at this point in time. And this has been shown to be safe. And anything else that you do beyond that cannot be endorsed by healthcare professionals because there's no evidence to back it up. And that is the issue, really, at the minute. Testosterone creams have not been shown to be effective. I think someone's looking at platelet-rich plasma, but that's a very, very experimental trial stage at the minute.
In the US, the CVVD has done a double-blind trial and found it to be ineffective.
All right. So, the last anogenital course I went on, which was only a couple of weeks ago, one of the doctors in London had said she'd maybe 10 cases have been reported, which looked but it definitely needs much larger scale studies. And platelet-rich plasma is not widely available. It's expensive, and you wouldn't want to be doing that with a kid anyway.
You can't biopsy. You don't want to do that.
Oh, no.
Absolutely. No. Thank you, Dr. Sandy, for all of the information. Like, if someone had a question, if they have any parents out there that might have a question for you, where should they reach you?
So I do have a website, which is just my name, www.sandyflan.com. I think there's an ability there to leave a question, or I'm on Instagram, which is lovely, thank you very much. Instagram or my website, it's probably the easiest ways, to be honest.
Awesome, thank you so much.
Thank you, Kathy, for having me.
Wow, wasn't she great? I mean, I did not know a lot of that stuff. I fully was not very familiar with pediatric LS, and now I know. Right. So it's super important. Talk to the little ones in your life. Open up that communication, not just for this situation, but for everything. You know, they have to feel free to come to us about any situations, big or small, knowing that we're going to be in their corner no matter what. So shoot me an email. Let me know if you have a little one that has LS, how we can better support you here at LS Warriors. And let me know what you learned. What's something that you didn't know? Or ask a question and I'll get it answered by Dr. Flan. If you want to get in touch with her directly, she is on Instagram at dr_SandyFlan. And all of that will be in the show notes. If you have a child with LS, please join us at our virtual meetups because they are open not only to women with LS, but to parents as well. You know, we had a parent that was coming regularly. She had a 5-year-old and she got so much information out of it. I wish she would come back because it was great to be able to see what the differences were and for her to understand what life might be like for her daughter when she grows up and what she should be looking out for. So definitely sign up at lssupport.net/connect. Again, that link will be in the show notes. And feel free to come ask any questions. And if you have LS, you know you already invited. So I hope to see you there. The last meetup of 2021 is going to be tomorrow after this episode comes out on December the 11th. So make sure you sign up if you're listening to this on Friday, December 10th. If you're listening December 11th in the morning, sign up. We meet at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and then 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So sign up and get in there and come and talk to us and let us know what's going on with you. We got one more episode before I'm going on a holiday break. I'm taking the last 2 weeks of December off. So make sure you listen out for that one. And then if you haven't listened to all the rest of the episodes, use the last 2 weeks to get caught up because 2022, I am bringing you some amazingness. All right. So I hope you have an amazing rest of your week. And I will talk to you next time. Bye.